Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Pre-Atlas II webinar on the topic of Rules of Procedure on Thursday, the 29th of May, 2014, at 2100 UTC. We will not be doing a roll call as it is at a webinar, but if I could please remind everyone on the telephone bridge as well as the computer to mute your speakers and microphone when not speaking, as well as state your name when speaking, not only for transcription purposes, but to allow interpreters to identify you on other language channels. We have Spanish and French interpreters. Thank you very much for joining, and back over to you, Olivia Crippen LeBlanc.
Thank you very much, Terry Agnew, and welcome everybody to this last of the set of capacity building webinars that we have been staging in the run-up to the At-Large Summit. This webinar is going to be dealing with the rules of procedure, which is a bit of a strange term when being translated in other languages, but is effectively the bylaws by which we operate. And it's important to know what the bylaws are and how they've come up and how they work, because it's a set of rules by which we basically work, and not only work, but define what our work is. So that's the aim of the call today. To learn about this, we have Cheryl Langenohr, who is the chair of the 2014 Nominating Committee. It was also an ALAC past chair for a great number of years. And then we also have Alan Greenberg, who is the ALAC liaison to the GNSO. Why do we have these two people speaking to us now? Because Cheryl was known for a very long time as Queen of Procedure. And Alan Greenberg, as we know, was the main drafter for the new set of rules of procedures that were adopted by the ALAC recently. So the two experts are at hand, and without any further ado, I'll pass the floor over to, I believe it's Cheryl who will start. So Cheryl, you have the floor.
No, actually it's Alan thanks. Who's going to start.
I was going to say, you didn't send Olivier the script, did you, Alan?
No, I didn't.
I think
he simply didn't have a neat snow, I didn't think. Thank you very much, Olivier. I think the first question is, although you've attempted to answer it, is why are we having a webinar on rules of procedure? In a general sense, I can't think of a more boring topic. However, there are parts of the rules of procedure which are relatively quite relevant to ALSs and to RALOs and to individuals representing ALSs, and that's where we're going to be focusing most of the effort. The rules of procedure not only talk about how the ALAC operates, but define its structure and the responsibilities of the various parts of the ALAC and the various roles people play, and those are the parts that we're going to be focusing on more. You've all seen this picture before if you've attended any webinars. We use it all the time. And it shows the general hierarchical structure from ALSs to RALOs to the ALAC. The key point from this point of view, from this perspective, is the fact that two out of every three ALAC members from each region are appointed by the RALOs, and that means by the ALS representatives to the RALOs, and that's the really crucial part that we're going to be looking at. And I think now we're turning it over to Cheryl.
Who had to come off mute? It's Cheryl. Thank you very much. I'm just going to very briefly take you through to make sure you all understand the structure as well as the function, and it is structure and function that is defined within the rules of procedure. Just to remind you, and it's something that as at-large structure representatives and as interfaces between your communities and the group of people in your organisations who are interested in these things, you'll often hear people talk of the ALAC. And when they're talking about the ALAC, they often are actually meaning at large. And so we do like to try and differentiate clearly in people's minds that we are all at large, and of course you are members of at large structures or individual members who are at large in their own right, but the ALAC is a
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm not sure, but it looks as though we've lost Cheryl. We're all at law something. Certainly.
I'm not muted.
I'm not muted. I just checked. I was fine.
I can hear Cheryl.
Okay. All right. You go back. Sorry. Then it might be me that has a problem. Sorry about that. Back to you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Olivia. I think what it is after all these years, your neural pathways start to just lock me out. I understand that. It's all right. So what we have as the ALAC, of course, is the 15-person committee, which is the at-large advisory committee. That's what ALAC means. 10 of its members are selected by the RALOs, 2 per RALO. That's the regional at-large organisation. And, of course, it's you and your ALSs that make up those regional at-large organisations and who are directly responsible for sending those people, those 2 people per region who serve 2-year terms in overlapping years. It's your responsibility to make sure you understand what type of things they will be required to do, what the expectations on them are, and that's one of the key reasons we're going through this very exciting topic, far from boring, of rules of procedure. So the 15-person at-large advisory committee have 10 who are selected by the RALOs, in other words, from you, and 5 who are selected by the nominating committee, that's 1 per region, and that's another topic which we could talk about another day, but at the moment myself and 5 members, 1 from each region who have been sent from the ALAC to serve on the nominating committee, are deliberating on not only the people who take leadership positions in the ALAC, 1 per region, and this year we're appointing for Europe and North America, but also a number of other key positions, including members of the board of ICANN. Within the ALAC structure, so you've got your 15 people, you then have a very important unit called the ALAC Leadership Team, and under the new rules, this is short version, is called ALT. So when you hear or see ALT, it refers to the ALAC Leadership Team. It's 5 members, 1 per region. 1 of those will be chair of the ALAC. 1 or 2 of those will be vice chairs, and 2 or 3, depending on how many vice chairs you have, will be non-titled ALAC members. So that's the key leadership team who were named differently, and we'll speak about that later when we look at a little historical context. You also have, serving as part of the ALAC leadership team, the ALT, the liaisons from the ALAC who serve to the advisory committees and the support organisations. And they act in what's called an ex officio capacity. In other words, they contribute to the meetings, they report to the meetings of the ALT, they attend the meetings of the ALT. In fact, it's expected that they attend the meetings of the ALT. But if anything was to come to a vote, they hold no vote. They are ex officio. Alan, anything from you that I've missed?
No, I think you've covered it all.
All right, next slide then. That's yours.
Ah, you're right, it is mine. Sorry, I can't. Cheryl, we put just for the rest of you, we put together some notes, and I'm not actually paying attention to what I wrote. Thank you, Cheryl.
I'll keep you on track, Alan. It's all right.
The ALAC leadership team, which, by the way, for those who have been around for a while, used to be called the Executive Committee or XCOM before the rules were rewritten, and we changed all the names just to keep everyone alert. Is an interesting group. It has no powers as such. The only powers it has are those actually invested in the chair of the ALAC, And the chair may, on occasion, delegate things to members of the ALT, or in fact to any member of the ALAC. But the ALT essentially works to make sure that the ALAC itself, during its meetings, can focus on issues that are important. There's a huge host of issues that come up that are not, don't warrant discussion of 15 people and don't warrant taking the time of 15 people, but they're decisions that need to be made. In a different world, if we had more of an autocrat for a chair, the chair would simply arbitrarily make these decisions, or perhaps vest them in staff. But in general, we like to make sure that there is regional input into all decisions, and the ALT does things related to that. So we, for instance, review meeting arrangements. We go over the detailed agendas. We look at all statements that ALAC might comment, all comments periods that ICANN puts up, and try to decide if there's a good reason that ALAC should get involved or not. If it's a lot of controversy, we may actually turn it over to the ALAC to discuss. But we try to essentially get rid of the administrivia so that the ALAC can focus on important issues when it meets in its once-a-month meeting or when they meet in person at ICANN meetings.
Just on that, Alan, Cheryl here, other bits of administrivia are great examples at the moment. A lot of the reviewing of meeting arrangements, whether that's the monthly meeting arrangements, or, of course, the big Atlas, the one you're all coming to, the big London gathering for the at-large structures and the representatives thereof. And they also act as an interface to make sure action items that are assigned to various individuals and, of course, ICANN staff are tracking properly and are being addressed. So it sounds really boring, and sometimes it can be, but without that keeping the engine running, activity going on, you would find that the ALAC meetings would be far, far longer than they already are, and I don't think any of us want that. So it does double up, if not triple up, the number of meetings and the hours spent by the leadership team, but what that does is allow the ALAC as a whole to run more efficiently. Back to you, Alan.
Thank you. Now, this is a previous slide, and you'll notice I highlighted the part that ALAC members are selected by the RALOs. It is arguably the most important part of the ALS responsibilities to select good ALAC members. If the ALAC members are not selected properly, if we do not end up with an at-large advisory committee that can do its job, then the whole concept of having at-large involved with ICANN falls down. The credibility of at-large in ICANN really depends on the quality of the ALAC members and their dedication. The ALAC has a responsibility to ensure that ICANN can succeed. If ICANN doesn't work properly, then having a good at-large has no meaning whatsoever. And we have the responsibility of making sure that when user issues are discussed within ICANN, within any part of ICANN, that they are addressed from, that these issues are addressed from a user perspective. Now, that doesn't mean users win out and trump every other, every other reason for making a decision, but we want to make sure that things are fairly discussed and make sure that users are part of the equation when decisions are made. Because ultimately, users are the ones, the several billion people that use the Internet, and they're the ones we're here for when push comes to shove. So the responsibility of the ALSs and the RALOs have a responsibility of selecting ALAC members that will do their job well. Now, what does well mean? That depends on what the responsibilities are. And for that, I'll turn it over to Cheryl.
And there we go. And am I off mute?
Yes. Cheryl, before you continue, I want to make one more comment that I think is important.
Sure.
Right now, we have a pretty good ALAC, I'll be honest. we probably on the average have a better ALAC than I've seen before in my 7 years in at large. But some of the things we'll be discussing over the next little while that Cheryl will be bringing up are because we have had problems before. We have had situations where ALAC members, both NOMCOM selected and RALO selected, simply did not pull their own weight and did not contribute sufficiently. And that pulls down the whole organization. And that's why we're focusing so much on making sure that the people who are going to select the next ALAC members, understand what you're selecting and why. And now, Cheryl, to you.
Thank you very much, Alan. Cheryl again. And just picking up on what Alan says here is vitally important. Part of the motivation for reviewing and renewing the new rules of procedure that the At-Large Advisory Committee, the ALAC, now runs under, was to make it really, really clear what the members' responsibilities were. And we're not going to belabor this point, but we need you to understand that these are the expectations you should have on the people you send to serve on your behalf. ALAC members need to serve on behalf of the ALAC and the at-large community, which is you, and those beyond you, all of the people who are connected as internet end users, and all of the people who are yet to be connected as internet users, by acting for the good of the entire ICANN community. That means you have to think about what the greater good is. The ALAC is not a place for division of opinion, for bringing personal and or particular geopolitical biases to the table. One has to be able to present those as issues to be considered, but one does not make a decision in the ALAC based only on a particular and sometimes quite polarised point of view. We expect them to attend all ALAC meetings, and they are at least monthly. So attend all ALAC meetings, as well as, and that's inclusive of face-to-face meetings, so that's all of the ICANN meetings where the ALAC meet with a very heavy schedule. And when not possible, they should provide notice that they are unable to attend. And this is something that we do need to do better. It's far easier for Olivier and the leadership team to plan a meeting effectively and efficiently if they know who is going to be attending and who will not be attending. And when one does not attend, it does not mean that one does not contribute. The best efforts need to be made by the ALAC member to send a note or material of briefing that says my opinion on this is, or my regional view on this is, if there is a topic of importance that is on the agenda. Not being at a meeting by teleconference or physically does not mean that an ALAC member, even an absent one, cannot contribute. They could and they should. They also need to prepare for and actively participate in all ALAC discussions, and that includes the email lists, the wikis, and various other means of interaction. Many of the ALAC members will spend some time Skyping, or what's called back channel conversations going on. I can assure you that right now Alan and I are also on Skype, and I sent him a hug a little while ago when he sent me into the conversation one slide too early, and he apologised for it. So you might want to look at people who are comfortable multitasking as well. The main theme here is the success of ICANN and the success of ALAC depends on how good a group of people serve on the At-Large Advisory Committee. I think we're up to the next slide, Alan. I'm hoping we're getting another slide. Thank you very much.
Cheryl, I really did advance the slide. Someone else had gone backwards, however.
I forgive you. Of course, that sounds like a very good excuse, Alan. I'll send you another hug in Skype in a moment. Just continuing on, ALAC members must take part in all, notice that, in all ALAC consensus decisions and votes. And these are things that are very important. It's not just the votes. There's a lot of online votes put out by the chair of the ALAC, and it's very easy for your ALAC members to say, oh, but look, here's my voting record, because the voting record is public. But they also need to contribute to the consensus decisions, and it is by consensus that ALAC in most matters would prefer to operate in. So you need to make sure that your ALAC members are contributing to the building of consensus and contributing to what points are raised during those consensus conversations.
And Cheryl, this is Terry. I apologize for the interruption.
No problem, Terry.
But we did lose our Spanish interpretation. If we could just please hold for a moment, and
sure.
I'll let you know once they're reconnected. And again, apologies.
No problem, Terry. Gremlins, it's not a problem. And I just wanted to note, Anthony, yes, techniques for consensus is a very good tool. There's a number, I mean, if you Google it, there's a whole bunch of mechanisms and key terms, keywords here would also be influence. So a lot of things that talk about building influence in group activities also help people build consensus.
Just a
waiting
moment
while.
Longer, Cheryl.
Yeah, that's all right, Terry. That's all right. I'm actually a very patient woman.
With apologies for this. Apologies, Cheryl.
No problem. If any of you would like to pop things into the chat during this time, Alan and I can start looking at any of the questions that you you might want to raise. And I'm just noting that that Alan thinks I'm giving away all of the secrets. Well, of course I am. What I do. No, that's not true. It is very important that that you're all aware what the best mechanisms of communication are, and that does include back channeling, I'm afraid. How are we going, Terry?
I am just a moment longer, Cheryl. So so sorry. I was waiting. I believe they're back now. I believe we can continue at this time, and I'll let you know otherwise if needed. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Terry, and welcome back to the Spanish Channel. Sorry you lost audio. I'll just backtrack one point so that we make sure you haven't missed anything. I was talking about the need for ALAC members to actively contribute to consensus decisions, and to show you as the at-large community that they are contributing a voice which is best representative of perhaps your views, but perhaps just wider views, into the conversations that build consensus, as well as, obviously, hoping to bring other influence if you have a regional view that is of some difference to that of other regions. You need to have ALAC members who are actively participating in the ALAC work teams, and that's often shorthanded as WTs. You'll also see that there are work teams or work groups that often occur in the generic name support organisation, the GNSO, or the country code name support organisation, the CCNSO, and we encourage ALAC members to be engaged in those other bodies, work groups and work teams as well. So preferably, they should also take a leadership position, at least in one or more of the work teams in which they participate. And on that matter, I think it's important, and then I think I'll be handing back to Alan, to note that Alan is an ideal example of the type of ALAC member who has taken key leadership roles and has led, been the chair of very important policy development process work groups within the GNSO. So when we say we'd like ALAC members to take leadership positions within our own work groups and work teams, or those in other parts of our organisation, the sky is the limit, because you've got an example here already where Alan has already led the way. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you, Cheryl. The responsibilities of the ALAC member, it's at one level easy to list the specific tasks. You must come to meetings, you must vote, things like that. The more general ones are the harder ones to describe, because they don't translate into specific actions that you can just tick off. But if the ALAC and at-large people within ICANN do not play a leadership role guarding the interests of users, and essentially being the conscience of ICANN from a point of view of users, no one else will likely do it. And it's a really important issue. And it's easy to understand it if you look at it from a historical point of view. But up until a number of years ago, before the ALAC became as effective as it is now, and it is reasonably effective, there were often discussions that would impact users in a very significant way, but they were never mentioned. And that's the kind of thing that we want to make sure never happens again. And that's why we're focusing so much effort, effort and discussion on trying to make sure that we have ALAC members who will contribute, and who won't just contribute in a narrow way, but in a much wider way within ICANN in general. And we expect ALAC members to take that seriously. If ALAC members are in a position where they can no longer meet the responsibilities, then we hope they will be in discussions with the chair, for instance. We will either find ways to make sure that we can make use of them properly, or that they resign and people have an opportunity to name someone else who can meet the obligations.
Alan, if I can just jump in there before we move to the next slide. I just wanted to take the opportunity, it's Cheryl again for the record, before we move away from work groups and work teams, because we've got such a great group of keen and interested participants on today's call, just to remind them, perhaps do a little advertisement, that the work groups and work teams are open to members and active participation well outside of just a 15-person ALAC. And what we'd all love to see, and I think the ALAC would love to see, is to have much wider participation from all of you in these work teams, in these work groups. And there's absolutely no reason why you can't take, as I know you've heard in other briefings in preparation for the ATLAS meeting, that there is no reason why you can't take roles as pen holders or as assistants to other more experienced work group people. And indeed, you can take leadership roles. You don't have to be in the ALAC to do this, but it is a responsibility of ALAC to do it. And I'd really want to encourage anyone who wants to explore being more participatory in work groups to ask your ALOs to get some of us old hands to perhaps set up another bit of training or webinar or mentoring that can help you do that. Back to you, Alan.
Okay, thank you. Let's look for a moment on ALT responsibilities. We talked a little bit about what the ALT does. Someone who is willing to take on one of the leadership roles within the ALAC, they obviously must be an ALAC member to start with. And what it comes down to is they're accepting a higher level of responsibility, a higher workload than a normal ALAC member. There are more meetings, and there is a stronger obligation to do work in between the meetings than there often is within the ALAC at large. As I mentioned earlier, or as I think Cheryl mentioned earlier, that we're still having a problem of getting people to contribute to wikis, to mailing lists in between meetings. And with an ALT member, they don't really have that option anymore. If you cannot do that on a regular basis, then you're really not willing to take on the load of a leadership team member. And although the leadership team is carefully regionally balanced to make sure we can get input from all of the regions in an ALT discussion, the ALT members have a very strong responsibility to act on behalf of the best interests of the ALAC and not necessarily their region. So it's a hard thing to do sometimes when you strongly believe something, but that's not the end result of a decision. But that is what you have to do on occasion. There are not often times when regions are battling each other, but there are times when one region has strong feelings compared to another, and those have to be addressed.
Alan, Cheryl here,
yes.
If I may, as you're changing slides, it's not just regional views, of course. When I served as chair of the At-Large Advisory Committee, I think very effectively promoted and was a good agent to get a change which the community wanted as a result of the review that went on at the At-Large Advisory Committee at the time. And it is something that I do not believe, and my core values do not believe in, as a good idea. So I had to put my personal opinions on this particular aspect to the side, even though I had plenty of opportunity to perhaps bias the outcome. In leadership, you don't do that. You do what is for the greater good. And to that end, I spent more than 12 to 18 months of my life promoting something that I actually don't believe was the right thing to do, but the community believed was the right thing to do, and it hasn't worked out too badly after all. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you, Cheryl. The next little item we're going to talk about is liaisons. We've talked a bit about liaisons to the GNSO, the CCNSO. We have four formal liaisons, that is capitalized L liaisons, if you will, to the GNSO and CCNSO, the two major operational groups setting policy for GTLDs and CCTLDs. The SSAC, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, and we also have, interestingly, a liaison to the .MOBI GTLD. That was part of their commitment when they originally took responsibility for .MOBI and signed the contract that they would include user input into their decision processes. Now, the responsibilities of the liaisons are large, and we'll talk about it in some detail in a moment. But essentially, these people are acting as the conduits for information back and forth between. I think we're going on to the next slide. They're acting as a conduit between the ALAC and the other groups. The liaisons are authorized to speak on behalf of the ALAC. Now, that's a critical issue because in many cases there may be a discussion within one of these organizations that the ALAC has not discussed formally. So how can you speak on behalf of an organization that hasn't actually put their thoughts in order? Well, it's up to the ALAC to pick someone they trust enough to understand the important issues to at large so that they can speak and, you know, perhaps predict where the outcome is going to go. Making it clear, of course, if something is not a formal statement of an ALAC, it can't be represented as such. But it's essentially someone who knows the subject matter inside out and can interact with this other group as appropriate, and essentially function as part of the other group. The liaisons to any of these groups, be it the CCNSO, the GNSO, or the SSAC, essentially function for all intents and purposes as a member of that group. They may not have a vote, but they are essentially part of that group and have to operate within those constraints.
Cheryl, just on that, Alan,
sure.
that's very important for the community to understand, because in some cases, for example, within the ESSAC, our liaison to the ESSAC operates as a fully fledged member of the Security Stability Advisory Committee. And to that end, much of what they may be doing is strictly confidential until such times as they put out a report. And so in that case, a huge amount of trust has to be invested in that person, because we, as the at-large community, need to know, with all the liaisons, that they will act, and you must have faith, that they will act in our best interests. But in the case of the ESSAC, it's one of those times where this may not be as visible until reports and things come out. Of course, the work that Alan has done over the last 6 or 7 years as the liaison to the GNSO is very obvious, because it is literally only the absence of a vote that makes a difference between him and any other GNSO councillor. And to that end, I think, Alan, you're probably the longest-serving one still there.
Right. I am indeed. Luckily, that will come to an end. Just like with leadership positions that Cheryl was talking about a moment ago, when and if your position as a liaison differs from the overall position taken by at-large or by the ALAC, clearly the position presented has to be the one that is the formal position. Now, in discussions, it may well come out that, you know, the liaison has a personal view that is different, but you have to make sure, one has to always make sure that there is no misrepresentation, that nothing which is just a personal view is characterized as being an ALAC position. And similarly, when the liaison reports back to the ALAC and to at large, one has to be very careful to make sure you're reporting what actually happened, not what you would prefer to have happened, or something like that. So it's an interesting position. If you can devote the time and effort that it takes, and it does take a fair amount, then it's the kind of thing I encourage people to look into. And the way to get there, of course, is to start participating in work groups and get a feel for what's going on. And, you know, slowly your level of knowledge and responsibility can increase.
Cheryl here, Alan. Just on that, and there's a couple of questions in the chat that I might cover. Some of the questions regarding liaisons will be answered in this next slide, but or the slide after that. But one of the things that needs to be seen by ALAC, and ALAC is the appointing body, so it is ALAC who decides on who is a liaison to external groups, because they are liaisons of the at-large advisory committee acting on behalf of the wider at-large community, but they are liaisons of the at-large advisory committee. And the ALAC would like to see people who've already established a good deal of trust and influence in the receiving body that they may be sending to. So if one had aspirations, for example, of becoming a liaison to the CCNSO, the Country Code Name Support Organisation, you would want to see someone who the CCNSO community already listens to, respects, and who understands the way that that particular part of ICANN works. Because each part of ICANN does have its own unique ways of working. And so to that end, I had the honour of serving as the ALAC's liaison to the CCNSO for a few years. And when I was transitioning out of that role, the current CCNSO liaison, Maureen Hilliard, who's sent her apologies to today's meeting, attended pretty much all of the work groups and activities and other than full council meetings that I did for almost a year. So there she was mentored, trained and integrated, and therefore easily accepted with a high level of trust and influence that is required. So when she took on the role, it was relatively seamless. And I think that's important for the community to understand. These are critical roles, and these are not roles that one just gives to one's friends. If people can't get the influence in the name of the at-large community, then they shouldn't be in the roles. Back to you, Alan.
Thank you, Cheryl. I just realized we're running a little bit late, so I guess we should try to go quickly through it and then have some time for a good question period. A small issue, but it's relevant, is the length of appointments. Virtually all appointments that the ALAC does, and whether we're talking about internal within the ALAC or external as liaisons or appointees to other groups, are one year from the end of the annual general meeting, which is typically the last ICANN meeting of the year, until the end of the next one. The chair is a slight exception. The last ALAC review recommended that the chair sit for 2 years because it requires a fairly steep learning curve. And although we haven't had many chairs in recent years, they don't turn over all that quickly. They did suggest 2 years. And what we ended up doing is essentially saying that the term is still a one-year term, but it's automatically renewable once if the person is still meets the criteria and is still willing to serve. There are no term limits within the ALAC, within any of the positions. Typically, there are a small enough people, who are willing to serve. The ALAC itself has a fair amount of turnover that we can't control because there are term limits in many of the RALOs. And we decided when we were looking at the rules to not impose artificial limits on stopping someone from serving if the ALAC wishes them to continue serving and if they're willing to continue in that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Cheryl, any comments on this before we go on?
No, I think we can get to the next slide, but that picked up on Constantine's question. Thanks.
The process varies on how we select people varies from position to position, and they're detailed in some excruciating level of detail in the rules of procedure, should anyone care. The liaisons are an exception in that although for most positions we go out and essentially look for volunteers and then have a decision based on consensus or a formal election, depending on the specifics. For liaisons, should the ALAC choose and a liaison is willing to continue serving, the ALAC can simply reaffirm them as the liaison without going out to a formal selection process. The considerations the ALAC takes in making any selection are, first of all, the willingness of someone to serve and their ability to carry out the job. There's an issue of continuity versus new blood. Now, it's good to get new people into positions. It's also good to have people know what they're doing. And it's a balance, and a decision has to be made, and it gets made by the group, literally depending on what are the important issues for any given position. And as Cheryl already mentioned, for liaisons, there's a certain level of trust which makes the position far more effective. And if the person can become part of the target organization, you know, when I'm sitting on the GNSO, and I say we, I don't mean ALAC, I mean the GNSO. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a little bit of a split personality issue, but you have to be able to bridge that gulf if you're going to fit in well in your own home organization and in the one that you're a liaison to.
And Alan, Cheryl here, just on that, it is perfectly reasonable for a receiving organization, in other words, the organization that the liaison or the appointee is sent to have their leadership contact the leadership team or the chair of the ALAC and say, you need to change, this is just not working. And they will do that. Believe me, they will do that. And to put someone in who is ill-equipped or ill-prepared or incapable of doing the role not only does our effectiveness as at large harm, it can actually do reputational harm to the individual. And so this balance between rotation and new blood, this bizarre desire for democracy with a capital D, which, to be honest, absolutely amazes me sometimes, which is where we get arguments for, you know, compulsory rotation, etc. When that's at a cost of effectiveness, it is something I will argue very strongly against, and I have done for years, and I'm not likely to change. But believe me, there is a real risk of reputational harm for a job badly done, just as there is a huge reward for reputational building for a job well done. Back to you, Alan.
Thank you, Cheryl. One last comment. You mentioned the term rotation. Periodically, when we have discussions, and it certainly happened a lot during the rules of procedure discussions, the concept of should we be rotating any given position among the five regions, whether it's the chair or a liaison position or an appointee to some group or another. And I find it an interesting statistic that I cannot recall in my 7.5 years a single instance of any appointed person being accused of favoritism for their own region. Literally, maybe I've missed one, but I cannot recall a single instance of where regions were badly served because a particular officer, whether it's, and said anything from the chair to a liaison to an appointee to another subcommittee within ICANN, is badly served because of regional disparity. So I think that speaks well to the selections the ALEC has generally met.
As you move to the next slide now, I just want to pick up on Constantine's question and Olivier's response regarding a yearly call for candidates. In the case of liaisons, of course, there is no need for a yearly call. The ALAC can choose when and if they are satisfied with the liaison they have appointed. They can simply confirm. They will make an annual confirmation of continuation in the role, providing they are satisfied with the person who is in the role. And that is a change from the old rules to the new rules. So, Olivier, there is not necessarily a yearly call for candidates for all positions at all. So, Olivier, perhaps I shall do a pop quiz with you on the rules of procedure over coffee in London.
Yeah. That being said, for non-liaison positions, there is a call, although in many cases the incumbent is the only person to volunteer and no one tries to run against them. But that's a conscious decision. Yeah.
That's okay, too. Yeah.
And on to Cheryl's favorite discussion of performance.
Yes. And now this is where I get very excited. It's Cheryl again, for the record, and performance, metrics, measures, getting the something that is tangible out of all of this. The new rules have performance requirements. This is hugely important because it's you as the at-large rank and file membership who now have the ability to ask how well and also measure how well the appointments you are responsible for are doing. All ALEC members must make regular and significant contributions to the ALEC, at large, and ICANN. It's in our rules. This is a quote from our rules. It's very easy to say, but it is particularly difficult to measure. And there is a subcommittee of the Rules of Procedure Review Group, which has continued on in its own right, talking about and developing metrics, the ability to measure these things. Some of these things are easy measures. We can get attendance and we can measure it. We can measure voting. But you can be attending a meeting and not contributing to the meeting. And so we're looking at ways of getting the hard measures done, how active participation can be measured, and the value of the contributions. And I'm not going to do it now, although I would be so tempted to spend another 90 minutes talking about it, because I am very excited about this particular topic. But take a look, if you're interested, at the work of the metrics group, because they need your input. They are coming up with ideas for getting these hard measures done. The easy stuff is easy. It's the hard stuff we need help on. And there will be an opportunity and a call during London for people to join that group. So if you're as excited about this as I can be, come on down. I'll be very pleased to have you join the group. Next slide, please. Ah, yes. good old remediation. Sometimes things just don't work out. And in my day, in the dim, dark, distant past of Cheryl Langdon Orr as chair of the ALAC, we sadly did have some people who were appointed to the ALAC who were not pulling their weight. They were not performing as well as the majority of the members were. And there was very little, if anything, we could do about it. With the new rules of procedure, that is not the case. We have specifically referred to the new rules and called a mechanism for remediation. It involves working with the chair and all the traditional mechanisms to make sure remediation is fair and reasonable, but it is terribly important to realise that a remediation process is not a criticism per se. It is an effort to improve the performance issues. Okay, so if one ends up in a situation where one is suggested to be guided or micromanaged or trained or encouraged so that a situation can be remediated, one should take that as a building of expertise exercise, not as a personal criticism. That works in real life just as well as it does in the world of ALAC. It's intended to fix, not to punish. However, if remediation fails, and we hope this is rare if ever, and it may only in extreme cases, we now have rules where it is possible to revoke the appointments, and that is all appointments, including those of the nominating committee. So we can fix our problems. If we don't fix our problems, we can fix the fact that the person is still there with the problem. We can remove leaders, and we can remove ALAC members. Next slide, thanks, Alan. Coming to the end, guys, you've blasted beautifully for us, and we do appreciate the attention and particularly the questions in chat. Virtually all of the ALAC meetings are open, and this is an opportunity for each and every one of you. It says so in our rules. Anyone can attend an ALAC meeting, a leadership team meeting, any of the committees, and any of the work group meetings. And many, if not all, of the work group and work team meetings in the other parts of ICANN are now also open. And we definitely want to encourage you all, because this is how future ALAC members can be nurtured and developed and built, and this is how future liaisons and leaders can be nurtured and developed and built. All of you need to consider getting involved in these meetings by attending. They also allow you to measure the performance of the people you send. Formal members generally are given the speaking priority. So if you're attending an ALAC meeting, ALAC members, the chair would recognise first, and if time permits, you will be as welcome to speak as anyone else attending the meeting. And that's a very important rule, and it's one that you should all cherish. And the working group members, particularly working groups outside of the ALAC, are now, as I said, in the main, more open to people, and we would like to encourage more of you to join and perhaps learn from the more experienced members who have got many years of working group experiences how to be a top performer. It's terribly important that we come up with a mentoring program to increase this participation, and I know this is something that will probably be an outcome of your London experience with Atlas 2. And a number of the regional plans for engagement are going to look at, certainly in Asia Pacific and specifically in the Oceania region, for example, within Asia Pacific, because we have huge distances, huge cultural differences, vast language differences and terrible time zone differences to deal with. There is a plan in many of the regions to look at working locally at a regional or sub-regional level on matters and then using individuals trusted individuals to feed those opinion pieces in to the ICANN or ALAC work group. Next slide, please, Alan. And that one's back to you.
Well, I'll give a one or two sentences first before the next slide, because the next slide simply says questions.
Yep.
Mentoring, as you mentioned, is something that we're talking about more. We need to do it more. And within work groups, one of the things that I would like to see is someone who has an interest in a work group should be able to approach the ALAC and say, I have an interest in this work group. Can someone spoon-feed me? Can someone help me to understand the issues? Because just diving into them sometimes, it's very, very difficult to get up to speed quickly. And it's that kind of thing that I think we need to do more, because just expecting people to volunteer and start working on their own is a very difficult challenge for many people who have not done it before. So I think that's a target of where we want to head. And if we don't, I expect people on this call to call us on it and make sure we do. If any of you want to get involved, call us on it and make sure we do provide help. It's our responsibility. Thank you.
Hear, hear. And I think with the next slide coming up, we're open for questions, although I have tried my best, and I'm sure Alan's done some when I'm checking now through the chat, to deal with as much as we can while we were going through. So if there are any outstanding questions that we haven't dealt with, please bring them forward to us now.
Thank you very much, Cheryl, and it's Olivia Capanabral speaking, and thank you to both of you for these. The floor is open for questions, and if you wish to ask a question, please put your hand up or type it in the chat, and we will try and read the questions in the chat as they come in, or we will hand the floor over to you to be able to ask your question. I was just going to add a couple of things whilst people think of a question to ask. And the first is with regards to getting involved and getting involved in working groups and getting experience in being able to run calls, take part in working groups, and then moving on to leadership roles. I think that both Alan and Cheryl have explained this in a very, very good way. I have found that, in general, at large, is quite a friendly environment to start being involved in policy activities. It's an excellent stepping stone to get involved more in GNSO working groups, that's the generic name supporting organization working groups, and also, after a while, there's also a logical step to take a leadership role in the GNSO working groups or take a leadership role in the cross-community working groups, of which there are likely to be more and more. The cross-community working groups are working groups that are co-chartered by more than one of ICANN's supporting organizations or advisory committees. So they are particularly important. And as we've mentioned in the chat, the mission that we have is important, since we bring forward the points of view, or we defend the interests of Internet users. We cannot purport to be representing them in any way, but if no one else, as Alan said, if no one else brings forward the point of view or defends the end user interest, then if we don't do it, no one else will do it. So it's really important to gain more knowledge and more experience in our community, and then be able to go out there and act and take leadership roles and responsibilities in the rest of the ICANN volunteer structure. That said, there have also been some volunteers that have ended up being employed, which is a good thing. Employed in organizations in the multi-stakeholder system or multi-stakeholder ecosystem, as we would call it. It's sad for us because we see them go, but it's great for them, and I guess it's also good for us because we see that we have people that are growing and certainly learning an enormous amount. Alan, you put your hand up. You might wish to add something to this. Alan Greenberg.
Well, I wanted to add a general statement that I realized I was going to say, and I forgot about it. We talk a lot about teleconferences and conference calls because an awful lot of the work of working groups is done online on teleconferences. And I must admit, before I came at ICANN, I had spent several decades of a career with, which involved a fair amount of teleconferences and telephone conference calls, which I was singularly unimpressed with. I rarely found telephone conference calls to be an effective way of doing business. And I was very dubious when I came into ICANN that this is how we actually get work done. I learned very quickly that if a call is managed and held, managed by someone who really knows what they're doing, and there's some discipline involved, teleconferences can be very effective. And it's just a bit of a learning curve that I had, and those of you who may not have had that kind of experience may wonder, how can you really do work over the telephone? But it can be done, and it's something which we right now do very effectively throughout much of ICANN. So just an interesting insight. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. Cheryl Langdonois?
Thank you very much, Cheryl. For the record, I just wanted to pick up on 2 points that came into chat. One is from Ganella talking about, could I explain more about regional input into work groups, bearing in mind that they're still at the planning stage? The answer to that is yes, I can, Ganella, but I think it's something we should save for London. I want to leave you all wanting more. And so I'm happy to, Alan and I and others are happy to fit in a little talk about that at some point during your London schedule, even if it means standing up during a lunch or a breakfast and doing a presentation. Certainly Alan and I and many others as leaders, current, past and present, have a lot of experience about working through informal presentations as well as formal ones. And I just wanted to note, Oksana, thank you for your valuing of our presentation. And I'm not sure that the cooperation between two highly experienced liaisons to other parts of the organisation should be seen as odd cooperation. Because unless we were very good at cooperation, we wouldn't be very good at our job as liaisons. So it's probably why this tag team today, which is a little different, you realise, and might I say has not been rehearsed, has gone the way it has. If that's all there is for questions, I guess it falls to me, and I'll give Alan the last word, which is a rarity. I usually like the last word. I would like to thank you all for the great attendance and the positive feedback we've got. And I look forward to perhaps acting as a mentor to any one of you as you want to take your pathway or encourage others into a pathway into future work on the ALAC and in other leadership roles. Back to you, Alan.
And you've said almost everything that I was going to say, except I look forward to seeing you all in London.
And I'm running this call, but I have not seen all the questions answered yet. I saw there was one in the chat which was asking, are there other groups or organizations currently under consideration for establishing a liaison? Or is there a proposal process to recommend new liaisons? So that was an interesting one from Constantine Kalogridis.
I can answer that. The answer is probably no at the moment. There is discussion of a GNSO liaison to the GAC, and if that ever comes into being, and there is some question whether it will or will not, then I think the ALAC would want to step in line and say us next. But yeah, the linkages between the ALAC and the GAC are probably better than with the GNSO right now, and the need is greater for the GNSO because of the overlap in issues that the GNSO is setting policy on that may be of interest to GAC members. So that one is a possibility. I don't think there's a, I haven't heard of any other ones within ICANN at the moment. We did have a liaison to one of the parts of the GNSO, the NCSG at one point, and that sort of died away. And I haven't heard a strong push from either side to reinstitute it. So I think the answer is, if the issue comes up, we will consider it, but there's nothing that is immediately in the works that I'm aware of.
And,
our chair may know more than that.
Yeah, Cheryl here, just finally, you will hear the term liaison, which is what we tend to say is that lowercase, not a capital, so a little L liaison, because the ALAC also sometimes appoints a formal liaison to a work group, and that would be when a policy development program work group is working on a matter that is so important to the at-large community and to ALAC, they want to have a formal conduit between that work group and the ALAC with regular reporting. And so you do have that layer of liaisons as well. But that's covered in our rules as other appointments. And so I'd encourage you all to read the rules of procedure. I'm happy to quiz you all on the rules of procedure at any time. So if I'm not busy or Alan's not busy or Maureen's not busy, we can always help you through the joys of the rules of procedure documentation. And we're happy to bore people on what I think is a very exciting topic. So can I just say thank you all, and sorry to be over time, but we hope we've covered off a whole lot of interesting things for you.
And it's Alan. I have one more quick comment that came about because of what you said. Cheryl described one of the other meetings of liaison. ICANN has a tendency to love certain words, and we like them so much that we use them all over the place with completely different meanings. The term consensus is a word that we use in ICANN with at least a half a dozen completely different meanings and expect everyone to understand which meaning we're using at the right time. Liaison is another one. So if you want to become part of the ICANN team, you're going to have to get used to this. Thank you.
Back to you, boss. We're finished.
Thank you very much. And Sylvia speaking. I thought I would never manage to get you to finish this call. The topic which you're relating to is fascinating and certainly particularly important, since these are the rules by which we operate, and they are somehow, as you said, different. And I would say pioneering in many ways. I noted there was a book suggestion that was put in the chat from Anthony Nigani, put a book suggestion in there with regards to finding consensus. I should also recommend another book, and I'm not being paid by the publishers of the book, but this is something that I used to learn a lot about how to run meetings, and that's Robert's Rules of Procedures. It's a very big brick, but it certainly is of great help in being able to run tidy meetings. We don't fully use Robert's Rules of Procedures here, but we certainly use a great many of them when all else fails. So a lot of people, when they just think, okay, where do we go now, we'll turn to Robert's Rules. And they are translated. I think there are some versions in other languages as well, all available in your favorite website. With this, we are greatly over the time limit for this call. So thanks to both of our panelists. They've been, and both of the presenters, they've been absolutely great. Thanks to all of you who have been on this call. There is one more thing for you to do, which is to fill the little document that was attached to the invitation for this call, which provides some feedback about how the session happened. And this will be helpful for the group that has organized these calls to be able to evaluate them and find out what could be improved the next time we perform such a set of calls. And I think that capacity building is something, seeing that the number of people on the call, capacity building is webinars are something that we're going to continue doing even after the at-large summit, because there is a need for these. So thanks to everyone, thanks to the staff, and thanks very much to the interpreters who have remained the additional 10 minutes past the end, the official end of this call. And this call is now adjourned. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.